But how do you differentiate yourself from all the other competitors, British Air, all the others? And they said it's not one thing that we do 100% different than our competition. It's 100 things we do 1% better than the competition.
Oh, gold nugget.
Welcome to the Small Business Safari, where I help guide you to avoid those traps, pitfalls, and dangers that lurk when navigating the wild world of small business ownership. I'll share those gold nuggets of information and invite guests to help accelerate your ascent to that mountaintop of success. It's a jungle out there, and I want to help you traverse through the levels of owning your own business that can get you bogged down and distract you from hitting your own personal and professional goals. So strap in, adventure team, and let's take a ride through the safari and get you to the mountaintop.
Rev up those engines, Alan. We're going to rock and roll today, baby. He didn't know what was coming, but I said I was going to
do something. I was like, where is he going with that?
He's revving up the engines. We have a great episode, but before we get to him, Alan, we have some fun stuff to talk about, right?
We do. A lot of fun stuff.
So what fun stuff should we talk about today before we get into the real meat of what we're going to do?
Well, I actually have a present for our guest, but we need to introduce him before I give the present.
All right. So,
but I do think we need to talk about the video shorts with our guest.
All right. So let's do that because, as you guys know, or maybe do not know, we're on the YouTube channel. Go out there and check us out. Safari Podcast. It is out on the web. It is out on YouTube. Go out there, subscribe to the channel, check out our shorts. If you can't devote a whole 45 minutes to an hour with us, you can go check out these shorts because we hit off some of the little topics, little hit points that are going on. We have had some great things. In fact, one of the things I do want to talk about is I got another call from somebody who said, do you have a few minutes to talk about business? Because I want to set up an LLC and I've set one up and I want to help my father in his business. And I'm like, absolutely.
I love that when that happens.
So I spent 30 minutes with him and actually I spent an hour with him on the phone because he wants to help his father who is an immigrant. He had migrated here years ago and he does flooring work, but he does it all for himself, by himself, word of mouth. And he wants to help him grow his business so he can one day not have to do all the work as he's getting older. And he wanted to help his dad with marketing. So we went through all the, how do you do it? How do you start it? He's been listening to the podcast and that's why he called me. And it was really cool. And
I love that. Give me a first name.
Logo.
Give me a first name.
His name is Theo. Shout out to Theo.
Theo, you're awesome.
Theo, you are awesome because you're helping out your dad. I wish I had a son like that.
Yeah, good luck. Do better, Dad.
What's he doing? Well, good news is he's going to law school. So eventually, I got a feeling he might be helping me.
Yeah, he
you know
might
what I mean?
Be. Yeah, I know what
All
you
right.
mean.
All right, let's introduce our guest, shall we?
Yeah.
We used to talk to him once. We used to talk to him twice. We got him back on. We're flying like an eagle with Steve Miller, your franchise guru. And last time we had him on, we had a lot of fun. But he texted us after and said, guys, I don't feel like I gave your audience what they wanted to hear. And we went back and listened to that episode, and he gave the audience everything we wanted to hear.
He dropped bomb after bomb after bomb in that episode without actually talking about franchising.
Right.
I mean, it was amazing.
So this episode, we're going to get into it. What makes a successful franchisee in the exit from corporate America? This is the episode for you. But before we get there, Alan has a bone to pick with the YouTube world.
Well, so you do the video shorts, which I have to confess, Chris, I listen to every one of our episodes, but the YouTube thing is TikTok, all that stuff is kind of your bailiwick, right? So you mentioned to me that Steve's YouTube short was in our top five already. I mean, it's a couple thousand viewers. And so I go look at it and it's great because it's our conversation about how Steve selling calculators to the Russians brought down communism. And for whatever reason that hit. And so I'm looking, and of course our podcast, we have a lot of fun, but we're trying to help people start their own businesses and help them scale their business. And so people are here for fun, but they're here for content. So I'm looking at the YouTube shorts. The number one YouTube short is you pretending to stuff all of your company Thanksgiving meal into your face at once. That's our number one.
That's number one.
And yet I look down and there's one that's called The Best Way to Hire. You would think somebody interested in business would click on Zero. It had zero clicks. I was the first click. And I clicked on it and I'm like, oh my God, that guy, what he said in that was revelatory. But
Right.
no,
Earth shattering could change the could change the trajectory of your business. But no,
100%. No.
everybody wants to
I
go
want to
out there
see
and watch
Chris
me shut
shove
myself.
turkey in his face.
By the way, it's epic. You got to go check it out. YouTube Shorts. If you just want to laugh for a little bit, I mean,
So I'm not saying anything about our podcast audience, which is in all 15 continents, but our YouTube people, I need to step up a little bit.
right. But you go out there to YouTube, and sometimes you just don't want to be educated. You just want to sit there and laugh at some goofball doing something stupid. The number two episode that we have out there, which has I forget how many views, is me acting like I could dunk a basketball at my age, but I had to jump off one of our drywall
Did you
lifts.
fall down at least? I mean, was there some reason to watch it?
Oh yeah, it's good. It's an epic dunk fail, and that's me coming off one of our drywall steps. Back in the back office because we have a hoop out back so the guys can shoot baskets when they show up just to blow off some steam and commiserate a little bit. But
So and I know we're going to get into the meat and potatoes of franchising, but I got a little present for Steve.
all right.
So I've kind of learned over the years of knowing Steve that he's just one of those guys that whatever I think I'm good at, he's just better. And it's in everything. It's in business. And then, so we're talking, it turns out, I'm a beer snot. And so we go out and get a couple of beers and I'm talking to him. Do you remember the time that I talked about the brewery in Belgium in the Abbey? And it turns out Steve actually uses this app and takes notes on all the beers he's had. And he has been to more breweries in Belgium than I even knew existed. And he's like, well, did you go to this one? I'm like, no. Did you go to this one? No. And he's got pictures and he's got notes and everything. And so the story of Park Brewery, Brax-a-Torium. It's in a 900-year-old abbey in Leuven, Belgium. And we met the brewery, gave us a tour. They don't give tours. And whenever he brews something, that batch, when it's done, it's done. He never duplicates it. And I have one bottle left. And it's one of those things where, what are you going to do with that one bottle? You're waiting for that special occasion. It just never comes along. And I'm
No
like,
way.
if anybody deserves this bottle, it's Steve Miller.
Oh, that's so.
Oh,
Oh,
my
cue the effects,
goodness.
everybody. Oh, way to
Oh,
go.
you're not
Dun,
kidding.
dun,
Oh.
dun. Thank you. Oh, beautiful bottle. We'll put that post out there. We'll take a picture of it after and get out there. Go check this thing out because it is not only a super cool bottle, but Steve loves it.
I'm getting emotional.
I love it.
It's
Isn't that
thank
cool?
you.
Well done.
Outstanding.
Very thoughtful,
Thank you very
Alan.
much, Alan.
Oh, you're welcome. And
Oh,
it's
I'm
funny,
impressed.
I have this weird personality flaw. So I have a lemon tree. I get about 16 lemons a year. And when I get down to the last couple of lemons, it's like, is this recipe lemon worthy? Is this guest lemon worthy? And then I never eat that last lemon. I
And
never use it.
you've just given away your last bottle.
But, and I'm like, you know what? It isn't doing anybody any good sitting in my fridge.
There
And
is.
there's a
Would
guy who's
you
going to appreciate
like
it.
to share it?
We can, but you were talking, don't you do this? Was it with your son that you enjoyed?
Yes.
So I kind of thought that you could share it
Oh
with
yeah,
your
he
son.
would love it.
Yeah,
All right. Well,
save it for that.
thank you.
Steve, we'd rather have you
That
do
is
that and then
kind.
send us a picture of you and your son sharing it, and then we'll post it out
I
there
will.
and we'll let everybody get to see that. But that is a very thoughtful gift.
No
The
kidding.
last beer.
The last one.
He's a
Now,
thoughtful guy.
he is a thoughtful guy.
He truly
Not for nothing, Steve. There's no way I get my last beer. So I'm sorry. There's just no way. I can't do that.
Even if it's a Bud Light, you wouldn't
No,
hand it over.
no, absolutely
No,
not. Yeah,
not
no,
him.
not my last
I
beer.
noticed you do have a
Definitely
couple of
not.
Bud Lights in the garage fridge.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, those things have been sitting there
They've
for a
been
while.
sitting there. Nobody's
Yeah,
claiming them.
that is that's when the kids come over. My son's in college, but so when they come back, all the buds come over here, and that was what I found from what they had brought down, quote unquote, and left.
They left that for you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
how
like,
generous of them. Yeah.
yeah. But of course, everything that's gone was all my good stuff. We good enough. Yeah, so that's awesome. All right. You guys, you've waited patiently. You probably hit the 30, 30, 30, because I do that too when I listen to podcasts and I'm bored, but don't get bored. Let's get
Why would
rocking.
they be bored? This was amazing.
This is amazing because he just gave away your last beer, dude. I
My
mean,
last
come on.
Belgian
That's
hand
the
brewed in a
bomb. Oh my gosh.
900-year-old abbey. Come on.
All right. So Steve Miller, franchise guru, has helped so many people transition from corporate America into the world of franchising, or not franchising. And so There's a litmus test that he takes them through. There's a process he takes them through. And so what I want to talk to him about is, what is that blueprint for a very successful person and a very, what I exactly was a very successful exit into franchising, not very successful as it not doing franchising. What is the blueprint for
Do you want to
success to do
start?
it?
You want to do that over?
I'm trying to land that plane.
Yes. I think you just landed on the top of it.
All
So
right.
just,
Michael, cut that. Oh, by the way, he won't. So it doesn't matter, guys. You just, all right. How does somebody become a successful corporate refugee in franchising? I'm done now.
Okay. Thank you.
And
I want to make sure.
I stopped. I
You know,
get it to a stop
Steve, I just
right
want to
before
let
the
you
end.
know I've been podcasting for 2 years with Chris. He doesn't give you that much runway ever. He actually stopped like he had a hemorrhage
I
or
did
something.
too. I did. I think the nose went down on the plane. I just.
Well, I'm glad that I'm glad to be back. Thank you for inviting me back. It's very much appreciated.
The last episode was amazing. For the listeners, you got to listen to
It
it.
was cathartic for me. It was also like I had journaled my career, and from I've asked my kids to listen to it, whether they will or not, I don't know. I offered it to them. They'll hear a lot more about me than they know themselves. So your audience knows more about me than my wife
Well,
and
what I
kids
loved about
probably
it,
do.
I mean, there was so much every step of your career, and we've had guests where we just go on and on and on about their background, and then what, and then what. But each one, there was like a lesson that you learned that is valuable. And that's what I loved about it.
And I think coming from that, it helps me, it's prepared me, equipped me to be a coach for people who are transitioning because I've been there and done that.
That's why I felt like we built is that your background suits you so well to be able to help people making that transition because you had been through so many transitions of your own and seen so many things. And that's why, I mean, you're on the mountaintop and people go up that mountaintop and they want to see you to find out if I'm going to be successful in franchising.
He's like Yoda.
Well, I was going up the mountaintop. Who's that guy at the mountaintop? Yoda's he's in the swamp,
Well,
wasn't
but
he? I
and
Donald.
Obi-Wan's in a cave.
Yeah,
Who's on
no,
the top of the mountain?
I thought it was Buddha. No, that fat guy can't get up to the top. I don't.
You got the wrong movie.
I got two. I have been accused of mixing up analogies.
Yeah, you
I
have
can't have for nothing.
definitely done that here.
So you want me to rephrase the question for Steve?
Well, I thought I landed it, but
I
go
think
ahead, please.
I got it. I
Oh,
think I
thank
got
you.
it.
Oh,
Okay.
dear God.
Thank you,
Thank you.
Alex.
Oh,
Although I should be
please.
courteous. You gave me a great beer, so I should be courteous.
You should have been, but that's all right. Shut him up. Let's get back to you.
So I would say this. I don't know if there's any one answer to that question, but I work with a lot of clients who are what you described, corporate refugees, people who are sick and tired of working for corporations. The acronym I use for them is FRED. I think I may have said this before. Maybe I
You
didn't.
did.
You did.
So they're FRED. So frustrated is a first off. When it comes, that's the first thing I think is how frustrated are they? Because the level of frustration is going to dictate their tolerance for risk and their motivation for wanting to do something. Because there are a lot of people that I would refer to, and you've probably heard this term, that are wantrepreneurs, but there are not many who are truly entrepreneurs, risk takers, that are willing to make the investment of the time and the money to go into a business of their own.
I like wantrepreneur. That's a good one.
Oh yeah,
Right there with Boss Hole.
the boss hole wantrepreneur. In fact, we coined that one. I mean, I love that boss hole, but wantrepreneur. Got it. So I'm a wantrepreneur, but no, maybe not. So how frustrated? How much risk? Then what?
Well, you have to, for the frustrated, I think you have to, I try to gauge what is their level of frustration. So if you think about when you go to the doctor's office and on the side of the file cabinet, there's a pain chart. Or on the
Oh
wall.
yeah.
And
The
on the
smiley
left,
face and
it's
the
a
frowny
smiley
face.
face. It's more than just a, it's like the guy's got tears coming down his eyes. And I'll ask someone, okay, on that spectrum, with one is little to no fr or even zero, which is happy and they're smiling. And on the far right, they're just weeping. And mine was probably a 12 and not a 10. I was really in a lot of pain. I'll ask them, but so where are you on that pain chart? And if they're not a 7 or higher, they're probably not going to have the true tolerance for risk and desire to go into being their own boss.
That is really interesting to me. I wouldn't have equated their frustration or their pain with their risk tolerance.
It's huge because so many people coming from corporate, Chris, you did, I did.
I did.
You did. You get kind of comfortable. And, you know, you have people you can.
Big Daddy was very comfortable.
I'm not lying. I was very comfortable.
Yeah. But you could tell other people to do what. You have a marketing. You've got an assistant. You've got, we talked about the expense account, all these things. And then when you consider going out on your own, you have to rethink all of that. So the individual has to be willing to be motivated by the pain of and the frustration of working for someone else, which will then, they're not going to regret doing it if their pain is great enough of going into their own business. If they're like a two, I had a client in New York. I said, what is your pain? And he said, I'm a one or two. I said, we're done.
What was that answer? What was his back to you? Was it like, no, I'm ready to go. I mean, okay, thank you very much. And click.
It wasn't that, but he really appreciated me being forthright with him. Because he had engaged with other people than one other individual who was in my space. And when he, like on the first call, this other, I would refer to them as a franchise broker, which I'm not, started shooting ideas out. Well, why don't you try this? Why don't we do this? Look at this, look at that. No, it's just like, I have to have 2 to 3 calls with the client before I even get to the point where I'm introducing them to options to consider. And a lot of it has to do with transferable skills is really important. Again, tolerance for risk, their geographic preference, how much they have to invest. And the thing that they don't necessarily have to have is experience of being self-employed or in a business that they would consider. 95% of the clients I've worked with would have never considered or discovered the business had I not introduced them to it.
That's a huge stat. I think everybody's got to pick up right there. He's laying out a lot of big things, but 95% would have not picked this industry given to their left to their own devices.
Or even known about it. No,
not even known, right? Because no. You're walking out, because if you're really frustrated, you're probably checking shit out, right? Mm-hmm. You're out there, you're like, you know what? Screw this. It's lunchtime. My boss said I had to have this report by 1. You know what? Screw that guy. I'm going to start looking for things. I'm going to start surfing the net. And, wow, that looks cool. You know what? I'm going to grow goldfish. I'm going to have a koi pond. Whatever. So you don't know. But I think what you just hit on is that it's kind of an exercise you have to go through. And if you don't take the time to do that, guys, you will 1,000% make it so hard on yourself and probably 100% fail if you don't go through this process. So I love what you just said because you're right. I mean, you don't know what's going on. So frustration equals motivation.
Yes.
And so, but you laid out a couple more things. So you ask them about, we'll get to the financials in a minute, geolocation.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that mean?
Well, the location in which they want to end up, they may want to stay where they are. They may want to move. They may want to go. They might want to go from, say, Buffalo, New York, where there's a little bit of snow up there, and they want to go to Florida. So it gives them the opportunity to escape at a crossroads of their life, where they are if they decide to do so. I would say the minority of clients do that. Maybe 10 to 15% do that. Again, it's a crossroads where they can make that decision to make a change in their life, not just their employment, but their career path.
Do you have what it takes to start your own business? Are you tired of the 9-to-5 corporate job and ready to make that leap into entrepreneurship? You need to check out From the Zoo to the Wild, the book by successful entrepreneur Chris LaLomia. This book is a unique perspective on the journey into the wild world of home services and delivering excellence in service while working in customers' homes. LaLomia shares his path to success in this industry, including proven customer relationship strategies, award-winning customer experience processes, and a unique approach to training a team of service technicians to perform at the highest levels. Whether you're a small business trying to scale or a franchise operation, From the Zoo to the Wild will give you the mindset, habits, leadership style, and customer-oriented processes to succeed as a small business owner in the world of home services. So if you're ready to take control of your future, get a copy of From the Zoo to the Wild today, available on Amazon.
Beautiful. All right, let's talk about the big part, and that's the financials.
Yeah.
Right. So when you're talking to them, well, how much do you got to have? I mean, you know, this is back. What's that number? Well, we can't give you a number. You know, dude, come on.
I can. What's the number? I can give you a number. So, I've placed well over 100 clients in businesses, like probably 110, 120, something like that. 80% of those clients are in business today or have successfully exited by selling their businesses. So some have failed, and that's we can talk about some of the reasons for that if you want to later on. The funding options are three, Chris. You can use good old-fashioned cash. The second is a Small Business Administration loan. And the third is rollover for business startup, which you take a part of your retirement funds out of the retirement fund at no cost or penalty, and set up a C corporation that basically holds that business, and then that's how it's set up. That's my least favorite. I don't like that idea much, unless it's an absolute. Another one is like home equity. Again, another one.
That's the one I took, by the way.
Home equity. It is. I did that as well. It's most of my clients are in their 50s, 60s even, but some are in their 40s. But when you're in your 50s and 60s, you don't have the runway to recover from if God forbid the business fails. So you're taking it up hard-earned retirement savings and leveraging that to start up a business. So my preferred way is actually Small Business Administration loan. There's about 4,000 franchises. 3,000 are pre-qualified for SBA loans.
Do tell.
So it's not that hard to get one. So let's say a 7A loan, it's a $150,000 loan. And by the way, the majority of clients that I've placed in businesses of those 120 or so, in investment range, working capital, or franchise fee, training costs, working capital, the whole enchilada to set it up is going to be somewhere normally in the $125,000 to $200,000.
Soak that in, man. If you're listening to this episode, finally, somebody give me some real numbers, because I hate it when everybody talks that, well, it depends. Oh, there's not really a number. Hey, Voya, I've seen those commercials. Bullshit. There's a number, man. Mm-hmm. We all have a number. Give me a number. I'll work around it.
Well, and I'm going to play devil's advocate, and Steve can talk to this, but there are some businesses that you can get that are going to require some real estate, and that's a huge variable.
So it's north of 120, but it's not less of 120.
Oh, it's way north.
Oh, way north.
Right?
Yeah.
That's the point. I think a lot of times people don't realize that because, and in fact, as you start your business, you start working on your pro forma, you start working on all this stuff. If you're doing this shit on your own, he just told you, right? 120, that goes right now, out, gone. Goodbye. You're not even running for a year.
With an SBA loan, you can get $150,000. 7A is $150,000. You have to have a 680 or higher credit score, 17,000 liquid, which includes cash and funds that are invested outside of retirement. So it could be in, you know, a brokerage account, and no recent bankruptcies. And what was the last? There's 680. That's about it. Oh, no, 17,000. Yeah, 17,000 cash. No recent bankruptcies, 680 or higher credit score. Those are the three conditions.
Right. So, all right. So back to Alan's point. You start at 120, but you could be, I mean, Alan, what are you thinking?
Well, what have you heard? It could be, I mean, if you wanted to get a McDonald's, you know, you're over north of a million.
And you're not going to probably get a McDonald's today because they don't want individual operators, but for the most part, they want, you know, people who have 30 of them or 100 of them.
How about that? Because I do know a McDonald's operator. In fact, that just reminds me, that's a great one. So, I just lost my train of thought
I do have a question. So let's say somebody listening, they're in the corporate world, they want out and they're thinking, I'm going to start my own business. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between an entrepreneur who starts their own thing from scratch and somebody who's better for franchising. I mean, help that person think through, should I just open Chris's, you know, burger barn? or
the trusted toolbox.
A trusted toolbox. Thank or you. Alan's the more trusted toolbox.
Right.
You could do all that.
Right. So, I think it's a great question. I don't want to take away because I really wanted to hear the answer to this.
You have to, it starts with, is it even a possibility, Alan? So do you have, the main reason that I think businesses fail is twofold. There's a lack of demand for the product or service, and they run out of capital. I think those, generally speaking, the two.
Not everybody's like you, Chris, with endless streams of capital.
Oh no. I've said this, and you've heard me say this. You've heard me say this no less than three times in my business career, as I started my business, I probably should have shut it down. I almost didn't make it. I was maxed out in all my credit cards in one instance. My wife had no idea how bad it was. I should have gone down. I should have just called it good. And I just stay with it because when you go through that deep, dark night of that you go through in your soul, I was like, I will not fail. I will not fail. And he seen me do it. I actually broke down in tears trying to tell a bunch of kids that you don't realize just how hard it can get.
Right.
I mean, you look at me now, 6 million in biz, you know, doing the thing. It looks successful. I in fact, nobody had no idea. Probably many of the people didn't have any idea how bad it was.
You can't tell them. Otherwise,
of course, it's unravels. A lonely situation.
No doubt.
Because you can't tell anybody much you've screwed it up.
Especially
how stupid you are. Especially and how much money you've lost.
Especially your family.
What a loser you are.
What Chris. A huge loser you are. And the imposter syndrome. And you said it. They fail. And I tell you, man, lack of capital. He says, Big Daddy had a cash flow stream. No, Big Daddy didn't. Big Daddy was almost as ass as out in the street. And you had to dig out of it, man. I mean, and I did. I mean,
that's a huge deal. So there has to be, to even consider it, you have to have sufficient capital to fund the business during the startup. And one of you said three times what you think you're going to need. I think that's probably right. Because it's going to take probably twice as long as you think it is to be profitable, particularly if it's a startup.
Not me, though, Steve.
You're the exception.
I was the exception, sure. At least before I started my business. That's what I told everybody. But guess what? I became exactly what Steve just said.
Yeah, I remember actually saying these words. This will be like shooting fish in a barrel.
I didn't realize
I was the fish.
Oh, my God. That's big. All right. So the 150 covers you just getting in.
Actually, it can cover, well, as I said, the all in 125 to 2.
All right. So you get the 150. That covers that. And then you got to go to work.
Well, no. I'm saying that 150 can allow someone to pay themselves a small salary during the startup period. That's Ooh. In there. That's baked in. So that's the all in. Working capital, franchise fee, training costs, that's the whole enchilada. So they cannot stroke themselves a check for the full amount according to the SBA to repay that to themselves, but they can take a salary out in the very beginning until they ramp the business up and kind of wean themselves from that. I think it's advisable. And that's why they want you to have a 17,000. So you have additional reserve capital if needed to infuse into the business. They want to have some dry powder should you need it.
Nice.
But there are loans that go far higher than 150. You can go, probably up to $1 million with an SBA loan. But I don't like, and this is going to cut close to the bone, yeah, Alan.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
He's a big boy.
But
I've cried a lot about this.
I've prepared to be in a lot of pain tonight. But go ahead.
So I'm not a big fan of retail operations. I told you that about last time with Scott. I tend to find business or try to identify businesses that are non-retail where they don't have to sign a retail lease. So they're not going to be food. I think that's a horrible, risky business. And if you're thinking about food out there, you need to talk. I'm a restaurant management major. Remember I said you were I cut my teeth in the very beginning?
Right. You got to go back to that episode. I remember you were in a restaurant, yeah. But you would tell people right now getting in a retail food business as a franchisee is a non-starter.
And people will say, well, how about Chick-fil-A? Well, yeah, go play the lottery. Because with Chick-fil-A, their numbers are they award about 100 to 100, 150, maybe 200 franchises a year. And it's not a true franchise. It is a franchise, but it's not. So the investor, the investment in a Chick-fil-A, if you look at a Chick-fil-A, you're probably looking at probably $1.2 million to $1.7 million to open one of those up, I would think. The operator, $10,000.
So you said 150 to 200. How many applicants per year?
For Chick-fil-A. I said 1.5, 1.2 to 1.7 million to open one.
To open
one.
Dollars.
Yes.
But you said they open 100.
Oh, they open, about, let's say 150 a year, 80,000
applicants
a year. And of those applicants, of the ones who are actually awarded, 80% are already in the system. So there's a couple that I know over here at the one in, nearby us. They're going to work in that location for probably 10 years before they get awarded a Chick-fil-A.
Oh, my gosh. So you have to work in Chick-fil-A and then apply.
But the majority, not all.
150. So that's why the Chick-fil-A thing, I think that's a huge, I don't think anybody understands just the brass ring you're grabbing for there. And so we're here in the Southeast, and here in America, the Chick-fil-A thing has been big. But here, especially in Atlanta, yes. Chick-fil-A is a religion because they are closed on Sunday. So they just happen to do religion on Monday through Saturday. But you can't get there, man. I mean, people say, oh, I'm going to go get Chick-fil-A. Well, good luck, man, because 80,000 people apply and they only award 150 a year. So let's think about something else. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So not food, not retail. So now what?
I like the space that you're in, actually. Home services is a great space. And you, how did you do during COVID?
So we did well during COVID.
Tonning it. Chris was tonning it.
I was.
Yeah. Back up the dump truck with the cash coming into this place from you.
I mean, don't tell my customers, but thank you for my new house in the mountains.
Yes. And my trips to Vegas and my trips to Barcelona and Mexico.
Tahoe. California.
Those are phenomenal. Napa. Home services are phenomenal businesses because you're not getting a retail location. So it radically reduces the overhead. Some of the characteristics I look for in businesses are that they're not adversely affected by the economy.
Point number one.
There should be low overhead.
Point number two.
Food does not offer that, right? There should be an easily explained competitive advantage.
Love that one. Love that. I call that unique selling proposition, right? Competitive advantage. Yeah.
And let's touch on that for a second, because one of the and I love franchising. You know, I love franchising. And it's one of the few areas where I'm okay with government intrusion because of what, you know, the way franchising started.
Yes.
Yeah. So we can talk a little bit
about
that.
I agree with
that.
Seriously, did you say I love government getting involved?
I said,
oh my
it's the
god!
One time,
okay. I'll, yeah, you get a little runway here. Go ahead. I'll wait. Oh my god!
No,
oh my
but
god.
What I do see in franchising that drives me crazy
really my co-host?
Is okay. You get five guys. They go out there, and all of a sudden, everybody goes crazy over the burger. And then within 2 to 3 years, there's 15 other. Burger franchises that are five guys just with a different brand, and then they're they're going through their discovery day with this is the size of the market and this is what makes us unique, and it's not unique. And I mean, and how many franchises in food especially have it's the Subway thing. You come in and you get to build your own whatever. It's a pizza, it's a sandwich, and so they just copy it, and then they continually just gut the goose that laid the golden egg. So when you're talking about unique, it's like you almost need to have the franchise concept that has got some momentum that's maybe new in its space, right?
Are you talking about food specifically,
no,
or in general?
Just in general. You know, when you're talking about a unique selling proposition, it's kind of hard to find that in franchising.
I don't like things that are unique and new. The shiny thing. I actually like the ones that.
How do you feel about axe throwing? I mean, there's all these axe throwing franchises.
No.
Hey, don't deflect. Don't deflect. I want to go back to this.
What?
He says, no, Alan.
No.
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 Bad boy. Bad boy. Slaps you on the hand. What? Do not go new and innovative. Go with old and stayed. That needs to, because if you
How do you go with old and state and still have a unique selling proposition?
You do it better.
You just do it better. Exactly right. Welcome to my handyman company called the Trusted Toolbox.
Or the more trusted toolbox.
But I'm better than everybody else out there. I just got done telling my team the same thing. We are different than every other handyman out there. I don't care how many handymen are out there. We're different.
Because you show up. One, more than likely, you're bonded and insured.
Two,
not
you're
wasted.
Not Chuck in a truck, so Three, you know who you're no. getting. You have a warrant.
I'm not picking on Chuck.
The warranty is not as good as the license plate on the truck that's driving off, because you probably warranty and stand behind your
we
service.
We do for a year.
You're professional. So it's a different thing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really, really important. I'm with you, Chris. I like the ones that are. Here's one thing I'll say to Alan.
We just got a turtle on Alan. I love it. We just got a snort and a turtle on Alan. All right.
If there's no demand for the product or service, there's probably no competitors in the market, and you're going to have to create that market. So I want competition because I can do it better than my competitors can do it.
So, amen. So you're saying the uniqueness of the business can be just slight.
And I remember this from many, many years ago. There was an airline in Scandinavia, still there, it's called SAS. And there was the CEO of SAS once said, how do you, there's hundreds of flights a week flying across the Atlantic, the Scandinavian overseas airways. And they were stellar. I don't think they're known for it today. But how do you differentiate yourself from all the other competitors, British Air, all the others? And they said, it's not one thing that we do 100% different than our competition. It's 100 things we do 1% better than our competition.
Mm. Oh, gold nugget.
Clean the trays that the people are serving, being served the food. Make sure the restrooms are supplied. Make sure the flight attendants are smiling and happy. It's just all those little things. And I can tell you from experience, we've been to Europe multiple times in the past 3 or 4 years because my son's been over there in the Air Force. We've flown Delta, British Air, Air Europa, which is the worst I've ever flown, American. I mean, we've flown probably six carriers over there. Delta is, who would have thought, the top carrier.
Steve just killed our Air Europa sponsorship.
But we got Delta.
Okay.
And I got an end to Ed. The CEO, by the way. So
Delta is they have
can't bring him on this because he's not exactly an entrepreneur. He's just good CEO.
Yeah, he is. That's a whole other skill set.
And he's not even from the Southeast. How about that? Huh? New Jersey guy.
That ain't right.
Anyway, I know
that.
But yeah, no, it's he's an amazing guy. Lucky that I got a chance just to even see him speak. Amazing. But you hit on it. You don't have to just do one thing better. You got to do 100 things better. And that's back to, there's a demand, and especially in a fragmented industry, there's plenty to go around. And if you just do it 1% better and 100 things, you beat everybody. And right. I love that line because that's really hard to do. Because it's not hard to do, but it's really hard to do. Because you have to be disciplined. You have to be focused. You got to want it, because it takes a lot of hard work to be good at all those and better.
Well, and that goes back to you. You're looking at more established franchise brands that have the ability to make sure that their customer experience is the same, regardless of which franchisee they're working with, right?
Correct.
All right, let's get into that one, because we're into the middle of this. And so what's the blueprint to get me to a success? And you hit on it. So stay away from the high retail. You told us, but franchisors, I mean, when you get into it, you got to find a good partner, right? So it's about me first. And then it's about picking the right partner.
Right.
How do I pick the right partner?
That's a great question, Chris. I'm giving you that one.
Thanks.
That is a really good question, because people don't always consider that. Because
you want to bask in the glow of that great question?
Can I have that beer? Shit.
He's got a halo over his head.
It's just a little glow around
Chris. Right now.
But it's a big question.
No, absolutely.
It's a huge question.
Because there are, I'm not going to name the name of the company, but there's one that I know of that I represent 600 brands. And so there's one that has probably 8 brands, and they do a really good job of selling franchises. They don't do a great job of opening them, which is also a major consideration, but they do an even worse job supporting them. They're in the franchise development business, which is just open them up and then
see
they're on
fix.
Their own. They're on their own. And that is just such a short-sighted, silly way to do business. Because you mentioned this earlier, Alan, the Federal Trade Commission regulates the sale of franchises. And I think it's great because if someone goes through the process of the, what's called, there's a document that the franchisor has to submit annually called the franchise disclosure document. There's 23 items in it. If someone wants it, just let me know and I'll send it to them. The 23 items include things such as the background information on the franchisor, their most recently audited financial statements that would disclose any litigation they've been involved in the previous 2 or 3 years. It lists the franchise owners with their names, addresses, and phone numbers, audited financial statements. There's just tons of information.
It has the former franchise owners as
it
well.
It does. Yeah. It does. And I advise my clients to talk to the ones that the person who's trying to sell them the franchise development representative, will naturally refer them to the ones who are doing well, which I want them to talk to because I want them to learn whether they can emulate or replicate that type of success. But talk to some others randomly, if nothing else, and find out. Here's two great questions to ask. One, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Excellent question. Love that one.
He gets a point.
He does.
And he's not even in the race.
I know. He might win by the time this is over.
Damn it.
And the second is, do you feel like you're getting your money's worth for the royalties and fees you're paying? Because the franchisor, Chris, it's equally as important for the franchisor to not sell, but to award the franchise to the person that they want to partner with. Because honestly, franchisees can be a real pain if they don't feel like they're getting their money's worth for what they're paying in royalties and fees. They get ugly. And they don't want that any more than the franchisee wants that. The other reason they have to be careful who they award to is because in the FDD, as I mentioned, they list the names of the companies who are the franchises who have failed. If you've got, let's say they've opened 50 that year and they've closed 25, well, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah.
And the franchisee, the prospective franchisee, is going to be able to determine that, look at that and say, okay, what's going on here? So they can't afford, if they want to continue to sell franchises, they can't afford a bunch of failures. So there's checks and balances in all this because of transparency of the information that's provided in the FDD.
So after you place somebody, and you've been doing this for how many years now?
14.
So 14 years into it. How often do you check back in with the guys you place in the first year and check in how it's doing and kind of reiterate and figure out, hey, you know what, I think I know what I'm talking about now. It worked.
I would say I have a relationship and a knowledge with about 25% of my clients. And it's just because oftentimes they become friends and I just want to stay in touch with them.
Well, I can attest because we all know one, and that's Scott Specker. He's been on our show early on, way back when. And he hooked us up and he says, you know, without Steve, he said, I would have blown it. I would have made a horrible mistake. And he helped me see differently about where I wanted to go, not knowing what I was doing. And he's a very assured guy, mm-hmm. like we all are coming out of corporate America. I mean, we've been told, hey, we're really good at what we did. We got to a station in life and maybe we got let go or maybe we chose to leave, whatever. We're still pretty sure of ourselves. So as you go back and check yourself and reiterate and go through this thing, what have you found has been the most, you've talked about the characteristics, but maybe a surprise failure.
I would say there's the one that was a surprise failure to me was there's another individual who went into the same business as Scott at the same time. He acquired a different territory adjacent to Scott. You would arguably say it's a better territory. And within a year, Scott bought him out. So in that year, that territory was probably doing, Scott was probably doing, he was really driven to be rookie of the year. And he really blew it out the first year. So he's probably doing close to $1 million in his first year. Maybe not quite that much, 750. The other gentleman was doing, I think his whole year was $40,000 in a better territory.
Yeah. So those who don't know Atlanta, and actually I know a little bit behind the scenes on this, and Steve probably doesn't know this, but in Atlanta, you think about any market you're in, you want to go after, if you figure out a target market in the business you figured out, This guy had way more and a way dense population that absolutely needed this service a lot more than where Scott bought. And he did 40,000. And in that same year, Scott did a million. So what's the difference?
Yeah, work ethic. I can't determine someone's work ethic. The other gentleman just would not get out of the house. He was incapable of interacting with others. And he was afraid. He was paranoid of risk. I'm afraid if I do this, I'll get sued. Well, what do you have to be afraid of? You have insurance. And I spoke with him on multiple occasions, met with him. He just couldn't get out of his own way. So that was one that was surprisingly really quickly flamed out. And he was highly motivated, just incapable. And then Scott bought his business, and he's doing probably $1 million in that area now, if not more.
At least more than that, yeah.
Well, that guy's lucky that there was somebody that would buy it.
Right.
He came out whole. And you know, the
wow, one, that, how about that? Being completely inept at what you did, and you get out whole?
He didn't. And now he's delivering.
Now I'm going to shoot myself. I'm going to shoot myself again.
I know.
He's delivering mail today. Last I heard, he was delivering mail, which is where he needs to be. Again, a completely risk intolerant position of delivering mail.
So you got to have a high risk tolerance, guys. I mean, again, starting your own business, it's not all fun and glory.
But I mean, the stats on franchising versus starting your own thing, like you did, Chris, are just way better. I mean, you really looked into the belly of the beast when you started it from scratch.
So franchising obviously gives you a leg up, and that's what we're talking about. We're going to start wrapping this sucker up.
Well, but I want to ask, so, you know, and I don't want to dwell on the failures because, I mean, Steve is very successful, and obviously most of the people are wildly successful, but I think you learn, you know, Chris and I have a history of learning from our mistakes. So let's try to learn from other people's mistakes. So the people who have failed in general, is it just a simple too stubborn to follow the model, or they you know, misrepresented themselves in a certain way? Or what would you say, Steve?
I think once they got into the business, they realized this isn't for me. Once they actually started to do it, it might be the managing of the employees. It might be the dealing with the customers. But typically, if the individual can hold on for, even if they don't like once they get into it, and they, what I encourage clients to do is do a ride along. I mean, go spend 2 or 3 days or longer with a franchisee and get a feel for what it's like to run one of those businesses. I think another reason, Alan, is because they get cold feet, or they get an offer. Like I had a client who purchased a franchise. He received this sweetheart offer from a company who hired him for a large salary. He was recruited, and he turned the business over to his wife, who wanted nothing to do with it and expected her to run it because he took this position, and it flamed out after a couple of years, and it could have cost him their marriage. Thankfully, it didn't, to my knowledge. Life happens, and people, when they get into something, realize it's not for me. But if they can hold on for a couple of years and build the business up where they can sell it and say 3 years, they're probably going to be able to recover their investment in it. Maybe not the lost opportunity of their time, the value of their time, but at least the investment in the business, they can recover it. But the ones that drive me crazy, I had one who did this. He was only literally 60 days into it, he threw in the towel.
Wow, what? 90. Then?
Yeah.
60 days?
60 to 90 days.
All right. This is a big one. And I feel like I got to chime in because in corporate America, and we're coming to the end of this, in corporate America, you never were asked, what's a day in the life of you? What's the week in the life of you? What's a month in the life of you? And I ask that all the time. I tell people, especially my sales guys, my project managers, day in the life, week in the life, month in the life. You've got to understand what the day in the life looks like, because you're going to live that day in the life, especially as a new business owner. You're going to live that for at least 3 to 6 months, hopefully 3 to 6 months, because, and you know, hopefully you're way smarter than me because it turned out to be, again, twice as long. But you got to understand that day, because when you said 60 days in, he was like, oh my God, I have to hire painters, or I got to hire handyman in my case.
When you think about the whole process of searching for and buying a franchise, the due diligence that you do, the discovery day and everything. I mean, the fact that you would pull the plug after 30 to 60 days is just...
It tells me you did no homework, bro. You know what I mean?
He did.
Ah, it just kills me. There's no way, man.
He even did a ride-along.
Because I remember sitting before I left my own business, and I said, you know what? I think I can do this on my own. So my friend had a tire recapping business. One of the dirtiest businesses you could ever be in. If you've ever seen tire recap, what they have to do is, first thing, they have to grind down the tires, right? Then they have to put a cap on. Then they got to mold it back in with a certain process. It is dirty. It is tough. And it is 24/7 because you have truckers that are always going down. And I went in with him and I met him at 8 a.m. He'd already been there for 4 hours. And I sat there with my business attire on because I was a banker and I had my suit on. I felt like I was dirty when I left. And he was talking to guys like I had never talked to anybody in my life. I mean, you thought longshoremen were bad. This guy was blessing everybody anytime, anywhere. And I was like, dude, you can't talk to people like that. When you're into my business, I talked exactly like him because you have to talk their language. But I saw it and I'm like, you know what? I can deal with that because I can be like that guy because you're being authentic. I mean, you're the traffic cop. You got to do what you got. And I saw it, but I felt like what the day in the life was going to look like is that in his case, he woke up at 4 a.m. My case, 6 a.m., but I'm doing home services. He happened to do tire recapping. And I was like, can I handle that rigor and that role? And I was like, yeah, I can do it. And I could. But at the end of the day, I felt like I could.
But you didn't have the advantage of being able to spend the day in the life with somebody or a couple of days. You kind of, like I did. I started up a distribution company, a rep group. I never really spent any time with anybody. I didn't have the opportunity to do that. That's one of the advantages of a franchise organization is the network of other owners can be invaluable. The ones who have been in it for, like Scott, for example, someone wanted to, my son owned a 5-star franchise out in Colorado. He ran it for 3.5 years and sold it. And after 3.5 years, moved back here. And thank goodness they have our grandbaby now and another one on the way. So guess who his mentor was? Scott Specker. Scott, what do you do in a situation like this? How about where's the best investment of your advertising dollars? Where do you get the services? Where do you get this kind of service for my employees, like benefits or whatever? I mean, it's invaluable that someone like Scott has done it before. And Alex didn't have to try to figure it out.
Gold nugget, right? If you buy into the franchise, utilize the network.
No doubt.
Use it because they are your coaches.
Well, it goes to the old saying of you're in business for yourself, but not by yourself.
And it's not just the franchisor. It's the other franchisees that bring that together. I think there's the training from the franchisor is invaluable in the beginning, but I think there's more benefit in the long run by having a peer group of franchisees that meet. In his case, they called them a flight. They would meet every 2 weeks and they would talk about issues they're facing. It's almost like it's a peer group.
Nice.
It's invaluable. It's priceless.
Guys, if you haven't learned something, that's on you again. Man, this has been dynamite. We're not going to do the final
four YouTube
questions.
Listeners.
You know what? No, these guys are soaking it all in. Is there one thing that you think that we've missed that everybody needs to hear?
Don't close your mind to the possibilities that are available to you if you really feel like you're stuck. You may be actually stuck, but there may be hope. And just be open-minded to the possibilities because what your perception is may not be at all reality. Just think about how much time you spend at work, driving to and from work. And like Scott, when he got home, from driving for an hour and a half from downtown Atlanta to coming, and he came home to Sharon, and she said he was a grumpy bear. Life is too short. At least investigate your opportunities and possibilities to have a life that you'll thrive in and not be miserable in.
You're not as stuck as you think.
You know what? I love that phrase because so here's my crass way. When somebody puts a gun to your head, blow the wall out behind you. Let's go, big boy. We got to roll. We got to get out of here. If you didn't learn something, that's again on you, man. Let's keep going up that mountaintop of success. If you want to get in franchising, you got to check out Steve Miller. Check out the details, man, because he'll help you. He'll help anybody, anywhere, anytime, because we just said he could, and he will. And you got to talk to this guy because he is going up the mountain. He is Yoda in the woods. You want to find this dude. But by the way, he is not going to give you his last beer because that was the best gift ever. You did the best. We're out of here. We got to go. Cheers.
Cheers, everybody. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, guys.